On episode 61 of Pop Culture Weekly, I talk with the amazing James Pickens Jr. about his incredible career and the Caucus Awards. Come on, Justin, hit that track. Let's go.
You're listening to Pop Culture Weekly with Kyle McMahon, presented by 92.9 Tom FM, an iHeart radio station.
Hello, and welcome to Pop Culture Weekly with Kyle McMahon. I, of course, am Kyle McMahon. It's episode 61, guys. I don't know, like, this is crazy. What the heck is happening? I love it. I mean, you guys have, you know, made it so we have 61 episodes. So that's awesome. And of course, I appreciate every one of you. I'm wearing my, you know, I always wear that. Some of you have complained about that. Black windbreaker jacket. Well, it ripped. Blue ripped it when he jumped up on me to give me a hug, and his claws ripped it. So anyway, I bought a new one. It's the same exact one as the old one. It's just a little bit longer, but it's ruffling. So now you have that to look forward to in almost every video in the spring. In any event, it's an all-interview episode today. I am talking with James Pickens Jr., which I'm really, really excited about. He's been on Grey's Anatomy from the beginning, and he's a huge part of that show. For me, I mean, Grey's, of course, Shonda Rhimes is incredible, and she deserves all the success she has and more. But for me, I love him in, you know, my favorite show ever, The X-Files. He was on for a number of seasons, and he was good, he was bad. I hated his character, I loved his character, I wasn't sure about his character. So I was really excited to talk to him about that. And one of my other favorite shows, Roseanne. He has been on Roseanne since, you know, essentially the beginning. He's on The Conners now. Just a great actor. And he was in Ghosts of Mississippi, such a good, powerful, important movie. So I'm going to talk to him, and he is hosting the Caucus Awards. And you've heard me talk about this recently. The Caucus Awards air March 4th, depending on, you know, could have happened or not, depending on when you listen. But this basically the Caucus Awards, the caucus is for producers, writers, directors in the industry. And they really do a lot of work in holding events. You know, their mission is all about elevating program quality in, you know, TV and movies and streaming. And I mean, it's a really great organization. They promote diverse quality programming. And I love that about them. So, oh, you could visit them, by the way, at caucus.org, caucus.org. Check your spelling. I accidentally spelled it wrong the first time, and let's just say I'll probably get fired from iHeart for what came up on this computer. So anyway, one other exciting thing before we get to the interview with Mr. James Pickens Jr., we have a brand new Pop Culture Weekly newsletter. So you can sign up on the website popcultureweekly.com or go to my Twitter, go to the Pop Culture Weekly Twitter, PopCulturePodCA, and you can sign up there. And once a week, you'll get basically all the pop culture stuff in one email. I'm not going to spam you. You know, I hate spam. I get emails from some businesses that will literally email 2 and 3 times a day. And it's like, bruh, you're getting sent directly to the spam filter now. And I'll just search if I need a coupon, you know, search my mail if I need a coupon. You're not going to get any, you know, any spam like that. It's once a week, unless there's something crazy. You know, we might do a second one, but that's going to be very, very, very rare. Otherwise, you're going to get it once a week, and it's going to be, you know, the episode, any videos associated with it that we did, any blog content, any cool, you know, tweets that I came across from others or Instagram or whatever, Facebook. Check it out. I would love if you joined me. And it's directly written. I mean, I write it directly every single week. I'm saying every single week, but I just did the first one. I will continue to write it every single week. So I would love if you join us there. And yeah, next week, you know, we should be back to the regular format plus the interview as normal. It's with all these interviews, it's been so crazy that I've been trying to pump them out. So I don't want you guys to have to wait. You know, one complaint that I've gotten is that it's not you know, every single Friday at X time. So I'm trying to do that because I love you and I want to do that for you. So you have something to look forward to or something to hate on, whatever. Okay, let's speak with James Pickens. Oh, here's the other thing before I get there. The whole point of me talking about the Caucus Awards, besides being a great organization, the Caucus, is that James Pickens Jr. is hosting the 38th annual awards. And again, depending on when you're listening, that is March 4th, Thursday, March 4th at 6 p.m. Pacific, which is 9 p.m. East Coast. You know, what the heck's it called? Eastern. Reese Witherspoon and Lauren Neustadter will be awarded for Producers of the Year for their Hello Sunshine group. Aaron Sorkin, Writer of the Year. Marseille Martin, she's such a little powerhouse. She's going to be presenting. Yeah, it's going to be fun. And with, you know, Mr. James Pickens Jr. hosting it, you know, as the star of film, screen, and stage, it's definitely going to be a good one. So there you go. Let's get into it now. All right. So I am here with James Pickens Jr., the star of film and television. Thank you so much for speaking with me, sir.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
So there's obviously we're going to talk about the Caucus Awards, but you have such a great career. I'd like to go back a little bit. First of all, I saw you in Ghosts of Mississippi when I was a kid, and that was such, it is such a powerful movie, and you played, obviously, Medgar Evans, who is extremely important to history. What was that like for you to play such a person?
It was probably one of the most fulfilling roles I've had in my career. I've been very, very, very fortunate that I've had the career I've had, but that role in particular, Medgar Evers was a lot of folks, he kind of went under the radar in terms of civil rights activism and stuff. He was assassinated before Kennedy was back in 63. He was really on the front lines and organizing voter registration there in Mississippi, and ultimately it led to his death. But the interesting thing was that after the movie was screened, and I didn't know this until then, my family is from Mississippi. Actually, my father, his family is not far from Jackson. And I had gotten a call from a cousin who had seen the film. And he called and he said, we watched the film and we really enjoyed it. He said, do you know, were you aware that the night that Medgar Evers was assassinated, do you know where he was? I said, well, no, I didn't. He was at our home. He had had dinner at our home. My uncle was quite active in local politics. He was a pastor there in the Laurel, Mississippi area. And he had quite frequently had communications with Mr. Evers. And that evening he had been at my uncle's house having dinner. And they begged him not to leave that night, to stay over and go in the morning, but he never wanted to be away from home at night. And that was actually the last they saw of him alive. So there was a very cathartic moment for me there. And it shows you like, kind of the 6 degrees of separation. So it was pretty eye-opening for me.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. And then to play him and then to find this out, I mean, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
And it's such a powerful film, and it's still, you know, unfortunately, not just for history, but unfortunately, due to the circumstances, it's still extremely relevant today.
Absolutely.
Maybe now more than ever.
I totally agree with you on that.
So you know, incredible work. Another one of my favorites, Roseanne. So you are Chuck, who everybody loves Chuck. And it's interesting because, you know, you've been on Roseanne pretty much the entire run and then now The Conners. What was that like working on Roseanne for you?
You know, that's interesting you should ask, because Roseanne was actually the first show I did when I came to Los Angeles. I had been a New York stage actor, and I came to LA in 1990, and that was the first role I booked when I got here. Actually, a gentleman who was the director on that particular episode happened to have been my executive producer when I was on a soap in New York City.
Oh, wow.
A gentleman named John Weitzel. And he found out I was in LA, and he called and asked if I want to audition for this role. And actually, it was a different character. My first episode on Roseanne, he was a different character altogether. And then they asked me to come back in the role of Chuck, and I was Anne Marie's husband. And Anne Marie had already established her character. That actress had established her character before I'd even come on the show. But fast forward, I came on as Chuck, good old Chuck, and it just kind of morphed into where I became Dan's best friend, and we became business partners. And it's now been, oh man, 90 till now. So they were able to get me back for the reboot of The Conners, and that was a blast. And it's a lot of fun to do that show. The folks are great, and obviously working with John has been great. Laurie Metcalf and I go back to the theater days. We were in a play together back in New York that was actually very successful, very pivotal play called Baum and Gilead that John Malkovich had directed. Wow. And so I knew Laurie from back then, but to work with John and Laurie and everybody, Sarah, everybody's great. And then Roseanne was good. You know, she had a momentary lapse there, but you know, I had a lot of fun with Roseanne.
So, and funny enough, you have outlasted Roseanne on the
on the series. Well, now that you put it that way, I never thought of it like that. So, but yeah, I guess I have.
Quick story. I wrote a piece. Roseanne blocked me on Twitter because I had written this piece about how much I loved the show growing up, and then I was disappointed in what she had said, and I guess fans of hers had tagged her in it or whatever, and then she said something to me, and then she ended up blocking me, and then of course it got worse with some of the things that she was saying. And I wrote a piece, kind of dramatic, called How Roseanne Ruined My Childhood. And it was, I mean, I was being funny. It was, you know, the headline was an attention grabber, but to bring awareness to what was going on. And I was, as a fan of the show growing up, but, you know, obviously I was disappointed in her, but I thought it was genius what they did with the Conners to continue the story in spite of, you know, some serious negative stuff. So I was so glad to see Chuck back for the Conners as well.
Thank you. Yeah, but it's a lot of fun. And the show still is very funny. I mean, obviously, Roseanne, you know, brought what she brought to the show, obviously. But it's still a very funny show. And they, you know, they assembled such great actors, and they've kind of kept it going. There's a lineage there now through the years of all these folks that have made the show funny. So yeah, I still have a good time doing it.
Yeah, it's a great show. And so my favorite show of all time is The X-Files.
And oh my gosh.
Yes. Absolute favorite show of all time. And obviously you played deputy director Alvin Kirsch, who was sometimes loved, sometimes hated. Sometimes I didn't know where you fit in. You know, like, is he good? Is he bad? Does he hate Mulder and Scully? Is he helping them? What was that like working on The X-Files?
I had a lot of fun with it. I must confess. I was not familiar with the show. I didn't, and I liked sci-fi, for lack of a better term to label the show, but I liked sci-fi, but I wasn't familiar with X-Files. It was my son who had watched it. And I, you know, let him, I say, hey, I've got this audition for the show, The X-Files. And my son's like, Dad, the X-Files, oh man. And he was like, man, you gotta do that. And so I got on there, and originally I was just on there for an arc. I don't know of how many episodes, but it wasn't that many. But the show started to evolve more, and my character became a little more integral in the storyline, until I think I did actually from the time they moved, because the show originally shot in Canada, in Vancouver, and then they moved down to LA. So I was with the show from the time it moved to LA until it ended. And so about three seasons, maybe three seasons and change. And this character just evolved more and more. And I was like, oh man, I kind of like where this guy's going. I hadn't never really played anything like that, but to have this character that was so ambiguous, he didn't know if he was good or if he was evil, what his relationship was with Mulder and Scully until the end. And he becomes heroic in the finale and leads them to safety and stuff. So I had a lot of fun. Still get a lot of folks who stopped me who were X-Files fans. And that was a nice moment in my career. I was am appreciative of that.
I love it, and I love you in it. Do you think it'll ever come back again?
I don't know. I mean, I did a couple of came back to do a couple of the episodes on the reboot, but I think a show like that, I don't know if they have any more stories to tell. You never know. I may come back in a different incarnation, but it's hard to say. Some shows you don't want to mess with them after a while. They create a certain niche in our popular culture, and it's hard to replicate that after a while.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah. So when the reboot happened, I asked one of the people I work with. I was like, "Can you do anything? Please, just give the production office a call. I will play Cadaver Number 4. I don't care. I just want to be involved in this somehow." And so I actually got a call from the production office, and I was like camping or something, and I didn't have service. And I go back to my cell phone, and apparently they called at 6 o'clock my time on a Friday, and it's three in LA. And by the time I get back to service and get the call, and I'm like, oh my God, they called me. I got to call back. And I called back, and it's like, I can't get a hold of anybody. And I'm like, oh my God. And it was for that next week. It was if you can do this Monday, we can get you to blah, blah, blah. And so I missed my chance at playing Cadaver Number 4 in X-Files history. And I would have been an amazing cadaver, by the way.
I could see you as one of the lone gunmen. You got that vibe on you. I think you could have made that work. Yeah.
Thank you. And that brings us to Grey's Anatomy, where you've been on forever. You play, Richard Weber. You've been on so long. I feel like, can you start taking patience at this point?
You know what? I hope not. It's been a heck of a ride. Obviously, it has become iconic and part of the lexicon of television. Never thought it would have the kind of impact it's had. And, we're now in our 17th season. And that's mainly due to Shonda Rhimes, our creator, who had this vision and wanted to show a part of our lives where we all felt inclusive. She saw these characters in a way that she wanted to see the world. And, she related a story when they were initially pitching the show. And one of the questions they had was when the chief of surgery was African-American. And they said, well, does it have to be like that? And she said, well, in my world, why wouldn't it be? And it talked to who she was as a person, and it translated in what the show has become, and it's touched on all different avenues of our life, and we see these characters who sometimes are ugly to look at, and the way they behave, and by the end of the episode or the couple episodes, they're heroic, and we see that we're in all of them, and they're in all of us, and I think that's what's been the moving. The moving forward of that show is that audiences really can recognize with them. It's been a heck of a ride.
Yeah. And then of course, Shonda, I mean, now we all just live in Shonda land. I mean, she just,
much deserved. She's brilliant. Yeah. She's brilliant.
She really, really is. And one of the things that I really admire about her, and you kind of nailed it on the head, is that she, you know, especially with people like doctors and you know, hospital staff, you, when we're unfortunately patients, you don't really think of them as people with their own complexities and that sort of thing, you know, but they are. And, you know, they have lives and they're flawed like all of us are. And they also happen to be heroes in a lot of ways. And I love that kind of, I don't want to say gritty side, but that underside that we don't always see with those types of shows. And she just brilliantly does that.
Yeah. She's amazing. I'm very proud to have been part of television history, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Absolutely. And so the Caucus Awards, which is airing March 4th, you are hosting. Tell me about that. If somebody's unfamiliar with the Caucus Awards.
Well, 4 years ago, they reached out to me to host the Caucus Awards. And I must confess that I wasn't familiar with the Caucus Awards at all. Briefly, what the Caucus Awards are, I think they were started about 37 years ago. I believe it was 38 years ago, and by some writers and stuff. I think Norman Lear was very instrumental, as was Ben DeBona. And they wanted to have an organization that would identify and celebrate and support young filmmakers, content creators out there, the next generation of writers, producers, and directors. And the show was basically founded on that aspect. And so they've, these last, I think, 37 years, like I said, they've gone out to advocate for young filmmakers and content creators, and they've created scholarships for them to further their careers. And a lot of them, they've gone into colleges and universities, film schools, and looked for and gleaned and supported these young filmmakers. And so that's what the caucus's main drive has been for these past few years. And I was and I said, okay. And I thought it would be a kind of one-shot deal, but they kept asking me to come back. And so now this is the fourth year of me hosting the show, and it's been a pleasure. It's been a blast. The people are great, and obviously what they do and the organization and what they promote, I think, is really, really important now as we see the landscape change in entertainment. There's more content now we need. There's a broader selection for us to look at. And I think we have to cultivate those minds and those talents to further Hollywood and storytelling. So.
And this year, it's a little bit different due to the pandemic, and it's going to be broadcast online.
Yeah.
How is that different for you than in the years past?
Well, obviously the biggest difference is there's no live audience there, you know. And then in the past we were at a big ballroom at the Skirball Cultural Center there. And so you had a room full of your peers to interact with. So obviously this year that's going to be different. Everyone is recording their sections of the show virtually. I did mine on Saturday, actually. All of my script was done then, and then they'll edit and put it together, and it'll culminate in the show that we'll see on March 4th. And I think they did a great job, and they're honoring some amazing people this year, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Yeah, one of the people that they're honoring is Reese Witherspoon, as well as Lauren Neustadter. What can you give me, you know, as somebody with a incredible career as you, can you give me some insight into, you know, their honoring?
I think it's just going to be honoring their body of work and their commitment to furthering how we look at television and film. And that's obviously Reese Witherspoon, and I wasn't familiar with the other honoree, but Reese's career has spanned that goes back 30 years or so. I remember seeing her as a younger actress, and you know, to see where she's come to now. But the biggest thing is they want to honor and salute those people because of their commitment to advocating for young filmmakers, TV writers, producers, content creators. So that in itself is a real honor.
And what can we expect from you next?
You know, we're still plugging away in Grey's Anatomy. I'm really happy about that, obviously, but I've gotten into the producer world now, so I'm very excited about that. I've partnered up on a project with Morgan Freeman and Laurie McCrea over at Revelation Entertainment that we've partnered with Amazon on a TV series that we're very excited about, based on a true life character. And so we're in the throes of getting that pilot script out and stuff. We got some great writers attached to it, really talented and young guys. And then I'm pitching a documentary one that we're trying to get out on Sheila E. Father, Pete Escovedo, the godfather of West Coast Latin jazz. And he's got such an amazing story, and optioned his book a couple years ago, his memoirs. And I say, there's a story here. So myself and my former cast member, Justin Chambers, we're gonna co-produce it. So we're trying to get it out there and see if we can get it sold to somebody. It's a great story.
That's awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to both of those projects and everything else that you do.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you. And the Caucus Awards, Thursday, March 4th. James Pickens, yes. Jr., thank you so much for your time, sir, with Pop Culture Weekly on iHeartRadio.
Thank you. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you, bye-bye. Sir. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Mr. James Mother Flippin' Pickens, Jr., love that man. He is such a talented actor, such a talented artist. He really is. I'm really looking forward to some of the projects that he's going to be producing and working on next. So we'll, of course, keep you tuned right here. So that's it. That's today's show. Thank you for listening to episode 61. We will see you for episode 62. Don't forget, sign up for the newsletter and hit me up and send me hate mail as you always do. I'm going to start featuring some of that as we go forward. And like I said, next week we're planning for a return to the normal format with the guest co-host and the interview and all that. Let's just hope that, you know, life doesn't change that. But next week's episode will be out on Friday, just as you expect. We out.
You're listening to Pop Culture Weekly with Kyle McMahon, presented by 92.9 Tom FM, an iHeart Radio station.
My Froyo brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge.